we can sum up the fatal situation with which we are confronted. Radical social change is objectively necessary. Objectively necessary in the dual sense that it is the only chance to save the possibilities of human freedom, and furthermore, in the sense that the technical and material resources for the realization of freedom are available. But while this objective need is demonstrably there, the subjective need for such a change does not prevail precisely among those parts of the population which are traditionally considered the agents of historical change. The subjective need is suppressed, again on a dual ground, suppressed by virtue of the actual satisfaction of needs, and secondly, suppressed by a massive scientific manipulation and administration of needs, namely by a systematic social control not only of the consciousness but also of the unconscious of man. A control which has been made possible by the very achievements of the greatest liberating sciences of our time, in psychology mainly psychoanalysis and psychiatry, that they could become at the same time powerful instruments of suppression. One of the most effective engines of suppression is again one of the terrible aspects of the dialectic of liberation. This divergence between the objective and the subjective need changes, I suggest, completely the basis, the prospects, and the strategy of liberation. Namely, this situation presupposes the emergence of new needs, qualitatively different, and even the opposite of the prevailing aggressive and repressive needs. The emergence of a new type of man with the vital biological drive for liberation and with a consciousness capable of breaking through the material as well as ideological veil of the affluent society. In other words, liberation seems to be predicated upon the opening and the activation of a depth dimension of human existence. This side of and underneath the traditional material base. In other words, not an idealistic dimension over and above the material base, but a dimension even more material than the material base, a dimension underneath the material base. I will illustrate presently what I mean. The emphasis on this new dimension is not replacing politics by psychology, but rather the other way around. It is finally taking account of the fact that this society has invaded even the deepest roots of the individual existence, even the unconscious of man. That we must get at the roots of society in the individuals themselves, the individuals who, because of the social engineering, constantly reproduce the continuum of repression even through the great revolutions. Now this change is, I suggest, not an ideological change. It is dictated by the actual development of industrial society, which has introduced factors which our theory formerly could correctly neglect. It is dictated by the actual development of industrial society, by the tremendous growth of its material and technical productivity, which has surpassed and rendered obsolete the traditional goals and preconditions of liberation. Here we are faced with the question, is liberation from the affluent society identical with the transition from capitalism to socialism? The answer I suggest is, it is not identical if socialism is defined in terms merely of the planned development of the productive forces and the rationalization of resources, although this remains a precondition for all liberation. It is identical with the transition from capitalism to socialism if socialism is defined in its most utopian terms, namely, among others, the abolition of labor, the termination of the struggle for existence, that is to say, life as an end in itself and no longer as means for an end, and the liberation of human sensibility, sensitivity, as a force of transformation, not as a private factor, but as a force of transformation of the human existence and of its environment. To give sensitivity and sensibility their own right is, I think, one of the basic goals of integral socialism. These are the qualitatively different features of a free society. They presuppose, as you may have already seen, a total transvaluation of values, a new anthropology. They presuppose a type of man who rejects the performance principle governing the established society. A type of man who has rid himself of the aggressiveness and brutality which are inherent in the organization of the established societies and in their hypocritical Puritan morality. A type of man which is biologically incapable of fighting wars and creating suffering. A type of man who has a good conscience of joy and pleasure, and who works collectively and individually for a social and natural environment in which such an existence becomes possible. The dialectic of liberation has turned from quantity into quality, thus involves, I repeat, a break in the continuum of repression, which reaches into the depth dimension of the organism itself, or we can say that today, qualitative change, liberation, involves organic, instinctual, biological changes, at the same time as political and social changes. The new needs and satisfactions have a very material basis. I indicated it. They are not thought out, I would like to claim. They are the logical derivation from the technical, material, and intellectual possibilities of advanced industrial society. They are inherent in and the expression of the productivity of advanced industrial society, which has long since made obsolete all kind of innerworldly asceticism, the entire work discipline, on which the Judeo-Christian morality has been based. While this society is surpassing and negating this type of man, the traditional type of man, and the forms of his existence, as well as the morality to which it owes much of its origins and foundations. This new, unheard of and not anticipated productivity allows the concept of a technology of liberation. A technology of liberation. And here I can only briefly indicate what I have in mind. Such amazing and indeed apparently utopian tendencies as the convergence of technique and art, the convergence of work and play, the convergence of the realm of necessity and the realm of freedom. How? No longer subjected to the dictate of capitalist profitability and of efficiency, no longer subject to the dictate of scarcity, today perpetuated by the capitalist organization of society, socially necessary labor, material production, would and could become, we see the tendency already, increasingly scientific, technical experimentation. And science and technique would and could become a play with the hitherto hidden, methodically hidden, and blocked potentialities of men and things, of society and nature. This means one of the oldest dreams of all radical theory and practice. It means that the creative imagination, and not only the rationality of the performance principle, that creative imagination would become a productive force applied to the transformation of the social and natural universe. It would mean the emergence of a form of reality which is the work and the medium of the developing sensibility and sensitivity of man. And now I throw in the terrible concept. It would mean an aesthetic reality, society as work of art. This is the most utopian, the most radical possibility of liberation today. What does it mean concretely? I said we are not concerned here with private sensitivity and sensibility, but sensitivity and sensibility, creative imagination, play, becoming forces of transformation. As such, they would guide, for example, the total reconstruction of our cities and of the countryside, the restoration of nature after the elimination of the violence and destruction of capitalist industrialization, the creation of the internal and external space for privacy, individual autonomy, tranquility, the elimination of noise, of captive audiences, of enforced togetherness, of pollution, of ugliness. These are not, and I cannot emphasize it strongly enough, snobistic and romantic demands. Biologists today have emphasized that these are organic needs of the human organism and that their arrest, their perversion and their destruction by capitalist society actually mutilates the human organism, not only in a figurative but in a very real and literal sense. I believe that only in such a universe men can be truly free, and truly human relationships between free beings can be established. I believe that the idea of such a universe guided also Marx's concept of socialism, and that these aesthetic needs and goals must from the beginning be present in the reconstruction of society, and not only at the end or in the far future. Otherwise, the needs and satisfactions which reproduce a repressive society would be carried over in the new society. Repressive men would carry over their repression into the new society. Now, at this farthest point, the question, how can we possibly envisage the emergence of such qualitatively different needs and goals as organic biological needs and goals and not as superimposed values? How can we envisage the emergence of these needs and satisfaction within and against the established society, that is to say, prior to liberation? That was the dialectic with which I started, that in a very definite sense we have to be free from in order to create a free society. Needless to say, the dissolution of the existing system is the precondition for such qualitative change, and the more total and the more efficient the repressive apparatus of the affluent societies operates, the less likely is the gradual transition from servitude to freedom. The fact that today we cannot identify any specific class or any specific group as revolutionary force, this fact is no excuse for not using any and every possibility and method for arresting the engines of repression in the individuals. To the total character of the advanced capitalist society corresponds precisely the diffusion of the potential opposition among the entire underlying population. The internal contradictions of the system are as grave as ever before and likely to be aggravated with the violent expansion of capitalist imperialism. The contradictions, not only the most general contradiction between the tremendous social wealth on the one hand and the destructive, aggressive and wasteful use of this wealth on the other, but far more concrete contradictions, such as the need, the necessity for the system to automate, the continued reduction of the human base in physical labor power, in the material reproduction of society, thereby the tendency to the draining of the sources of surplus profit, and so on. These are real contradictions. Finally, the threat of technological unemployment, which even the most affluent society may no longer be capable of compensating by the creation of ever more parasitarian and unproductive labor. All these contradictions exist. As reaction and because of their contradiction, suppression, manipulation and integration are likely to increase. But the ferment is there. The ground can and must be prepared. The mutilated consciousness and the mutilated instinct.